It's almost all attributable to the military spending. And
we're going to leave it there, but we'll continue the conversation after and post it online at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
I'm Arianna Huffington. You're listening to Think Out Loud on WUSB's Stony Brook.
Well, no, not exactly. That's not true. I hate to disagree with her because she always gets very touchy when you do. But no, you're not listening to that program. You're listening, you might be thinking out loud, I don't know. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, where it's 5:59. We have an abbreviated show tonight, so we're going to start early. How about that? Time for Off the Wall.
This is Arianna Huffington. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Much better. good evening. Sorry for the delay. I was trying to get a Mac to work, and I succeeded. I actually got it to work. How about that? Good evening. It's, like I said, an abbreviated edition of Off the Wall. We have a basketball game going up at 6:45. And in fact, next week we will as well, so two abbreviated shows. Next week, of course, is the, hesitate to say, the final selection of the final Starbucks I just finally decided to go to for the first time in my life. And we know it's going to be one of two in California sometime in 2011. I don't want to say much more than that because when I say things, people get all excited and turn it into a bigger thing than it really is. Last week was ridiculous, and I want to apologize to people for the shenanigans that went on here with the crowd of people, with there were a couple of injuries when people were trying to get out. I know there was some dissatisfaction when Oklahoma City didn't make the grade. People driving cross-country to witness the spectacle, it's got to stop. And next week, no more. It ends next week. So finally, we're over with this quest for Starbucks nonsense that I'm sorry I ever brought up in the first place. We've had one serious injury. We've had people who aren't allowed back into the country now, apparently. I refer to the original dancers. The people from Mexico who were here a few weeks ago, you know, they just never came back. And I have a sinking suspicion, that when we had Paladino in the studio that week, when he thought he was going to be on Democracy Now! And he showed up to apparently be interviewed on a pre-recorded program, I think he did something to get them in trouble with some agency, because that's just the kind of thing he does. And he's been in a lousy mood ever since he lost the election. No one's even seen him since then. You know, he sent me something. Well, he didn't send me something. he doesn't know who I am, fortunately. But well, he knows me as the guy that told him he was an idiot for being in a studio watching a computer playback and thinking he was going to be interviewed by that show. But he sent everybody in New York State, I think, or a lot of people in New York State, this very official-looking envelope that says, "Important tax information enclosed. Do not discard." And you open the thing up, and it looks just like the IRS. It says important tax information on this little card, and you have a taxpayer ID number. And the taxpayer ID, I'm going to read it to you. I'm going to read you my taxpayer ID number, because it's not my taxpayer ID number. It's 82752-99073-221-5331. Now, those of you who pay taxes or who might have a taxpayer ID number, which generally goes with businesses, it's basically the same length as a Social Security number, but it goes two digits and then, what is it, however many more are left after that. Seven, I think. I don't know. It's not that format. It's not that length. So you have a fake taxpayer ID number there. And then after that, you have a group number, group 179-324. Year 2010, and then your name and address are printed below that, and in parentheses it says, "See back of this card." And so you see the back of the card with great trepidation. What does it say? "Only Carl Paladino has a specific plan to cut property taxes." And it just goes on into the usual spiel about how he's going to send Andrew Cuomo a message. It's just, I don't know if there are rules against this kind of thing. Forging, making it seem like you're sending a tax notice to somebody, scaring the bejesus out of them. If there isn't a rule, fine, but it's not playing nice, I don't think. It's not playing cricket. So, yeah, that's the kind of guy we're dealing with here. So he probably, I don't know what he did with those people who were in the conference room a few weeks ago, but I'm sorry they're not here. They were fun. The food was good. But again, next week it's over, and hopefully no more incidents. Again, apologies to any people who were involved last week, any people who were listening last week. And please don't listen to the show last week, because it's like hearing me fall down the stairs. Yeah, that's no fun. Speaking of somebody falling down the stairs, I've got something. This is actually what I was trying to get to work. We must say. Wait, I didn't ask for any. Where is that coming from? Oh, that's the computer. We're getting, I see. Amy is still going. Okay, we're going to stop Amy. She's doing another Democracy Now. Okay, we're going to go back to the computer, go over to the browser. Can we do this? No, it's a Mac, but she'll be able to do two things at once. Okay, This is Sarah Palin being interviewed. Who's she being interviewed by? Oh, somebody. Is it Glenn Beck? Is it really Glenn Beck? She talks to Glenn Beck. Won't talk to us, but we'll talk to Glenn Beck. Go figure. She's being asked about the current crisis situation between the two Koreas. Let's listen.
You said in the last few days that you are considering a run for president, and polls show that you would probably win the Republican nomination. How would you handle a situation like just developed in North Korea?
Well, North Korea, this is stemming from, I think, a greater problem when we're all sitting around asking, oh, no, what are we going to do? And we're not having a lot of faith that the White House is going to come out with a strong enough policy to sanction what it is that North Korea is going to do. So this speaks to a bigger picture here that certainly scares me in terms of our national security policies. But obviously, got to stand with our North Korean allies. We're bound to by treaty.
South
we're
Korean.
Also bound by...
Whatever. North Korea and South Korea, all the same thing. Stand by our North Korean allies. Well, you know, Sarah, you might have North Korean allies, but most people in this country have a little bit of what's known as patriotism, where we stand by our South Korean allies. Yeah, I know. It's just names of countries. They get very confusing, as do names of leaders and policy and history and geography and all that kind of nonsense. And I know, I'm nitpicking here. I'm picking on somebody just simply for making an error in speech. But I think it also underlies that some people don't really pay attention to what's going on. They just kind of hear the news and sort of regurgitate what's being told to them without really understanding the facts. Something to keep in mind. And if I'm wrong, well, keep listening to Sarah Palin and see if maybe there's more evidence that that will come in. But speaking of the Korean situation, wow, that is getting that's getting pretty crazy. The North Koreans shelled an island that is very close to North Korea. It's part of South Korea, but it's very close to North Korea. I don't know who would want to live on that island. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it just seems like you're flirting with disaster there, and disaster struck. Now, what I find interesting in the coverage of this is that if you read all the accounts, what happened was the South Koreans were playing around with guns or something like that in the water. There was some kind of war game going on. There always is. There always is some kind of military maneuver that's going on right now with the United States. We're involved. We do this every year, apparently. Not quite sure why they have to do it so close to disputed territory. They could do it anywhere else, but they chose to do it there. And North Koreans claim that something was fired into their territory, or somebody went over the border, and so they responded, and they responded hard. And they shelled this island, they killed two Marines, they killed two civilians. And pretty much most of the world has condemned those actions, and they certainly weren't very nice actions. But I find it interesting the way the media covers it. And, you know, this is probably correct, too. It probably is correct that the North Koreans were unprovoked. I'm agreeing with this. But I just find it interesting that when you watch the media, listen to what the media has to say, they don't question the other side at all. Basically, the South Koreans claim they did not fire into the North Korean territory. End of story. That's all you need to say. Doesn't have to be any proof. Doesn't have to be any investigation. How do you know this? How can you prove this? Let's look at the tape. Nothing like that. Just they said that. Okay, that's it. We've looked at the other side of the story. Well, what if South Korea was not exactly being forthright? What if they actually did make a mistake or did something on purpose? Well, we'll never find out because we don't investigate. We just believe one side over another. And like I said, history has shown that one side is a bit more rational than the other side, a bit more trustworthy, but, you know, not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. When you look at the public reaction to what happened and how people were calling for the head of the military's head because he didn't act forcefully enough, I think it takes a lot more courage to hold back a little bit and not just launch into all-out war, which is what so many people seem to want. Yeah, he certainly could have retaliated, and we could be sending our troops over there right now and yet another war to get involved in, because we kind of promised we'd have their backs. But sometimes a little restraint is called for. Revenge, yeah, revenge might feel good. But it leaves you pretty dead in the end. So, it's fun, though, listening to the rhetoric going back and forth, particularly with North Korea. And I've been following this for years. It's, when you get North Korea angry, I'm not sure how they do it. I don't know how they actually put pen to paper and come up with these phrases. Looking at Fox News here, the North unleashed its anger over the drills that are going on now in a dispatch early Friday on its state news agency, saying the weekend drills were a reckless move to target the North. And here's a quote from the Korean Central News Agency. The situation on the Korean Peninsula is inching closer to the brink of war. Okay, that's pretty direct, but it's nothing. Nothing compared to when they really get going. Listen to this. North Korea's dispatch said that the country's army and people are now greatly enraged and getting fully ready to give a shower of dreadful fire. Escalated confrontation would lead to a war, and he who is fond of playing with fire is bound to perish. Yeah, isn't that something? Now, there was a whole article about this manner of speech that appeared on CNN. Running dogs, imperialist lackeys, criminal gangs, and brigandish moves. That sort of propaganda language died with the Cold War, except in the offices of the Korean Central News Agency. I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing brigandish right, because I've never said that word before. I have no reason to. I'll keep saying it that way. The official mouthpiece of the North Korean government, KCNA, is rarely at a loss for words, and it has never heeded the advice of Mark Twain, when you catch an adjective, kill it. But despite its own belligerent and always flowery rhetoric, it's also a somewhat opaque window on the thinking in Pyongyang, which is the capital of North Korea. But you knew that. KCNA was founded in 1946 and supplies the staple diet for all newspapers, radio, and television in the country. At a pep talk in 1964, at a pep talk in 1964, its workers received this advice from a senior party official. The agency, quote, must pay serious attention to each word, to each dot of the writings it releases, because they express the standpoint of our party and the government of our republic. As for an editorial line, the official went on, so far we have slapped the enemy in the face. From now onwards, we must strike at it with a heavy club. They don't refer to South Korea. Instead, they use terms like the South Korean puppet group. Sometimes it drops any reference to the South, opting for expressions like the Lee Myung-bak group's treacherous and anti-reunification acts, referring to South Korea's current president. And it liberally uses quotation marks to imply illegitimacy. And in recent years, it has favored my favorite word here, brigandish, as the adjective of choice for the United States. Last year, it wrote that remarks by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton were brigandish sophism. Am I saying that right? I would not fare well over there. Brigandish sophism, reminiscent of a thief crying, stop the thief. Reminiscent of a thief crying, stop the thief. I like that. Clinton seems a favorite target. Sometimes she looks like a primary schoolgirl, they say, and sometimes a pensioner gone shopping. Yeah. Oh, they have fun, don't they? It frequently warns that war is imminent, and language is often recycled. This week, the wording is that the Korean Peninsula is inching closer to the brink of war due to the reckless plan of those trigger-happy elements. Yeah. Well, that's the fun news coming out of North Korea and South Korea. We got a couple more quotes. This is from the New York Times. If the U.S. brings its carrier to the West Sea of Korea at last, no one can predict the ensuing consequences. We will put our feelings of rage and animosity in our bones and take our revenge on North Korea. And finally, they concluded by saying, North Korea said it had made superhuman efforts to prevent a clash at the last moment. Superhuman efforts. Superhuman efforts. Wow. But one thing that was rather significant here, and you have to read into all these little things significance. They said that the civilian deaths were very regrettable, and that is known as an uncharacteristic show of remorse. So maybe they really didn't mean to do that. Yeah, little things like when the new leader, I don't know what they're going to call him. The first leader was the great leader. right? That Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, the current leader, is the dear leader. Now, the new leader, Kim Jong-un, what's he going to be called? You know, they have to come up with another adjective for him. Maybe they're trying to figure that out. But one thing that they did fairly recently, after he was named as the heir apparent to his father, he appeared at one of these military parades, but he appeared out of uniform. I think he was given the position of general fairly recently, too, at the same time that he was announced as the new president sometime in the future. And the thinking behind this was, this was to appease other members of the military, because other members of the military might think this young punk just rose up out of nowhere. Here he is, strutting around in his general's outfit, about to be president of the country. Are we going to stand for this? I don't think so. That could be what was going through their heads. Not out loud, of course, but seeing him wearing civilian garb at a military parade communicated all that to the West, that there were these concerns. And if there are these concerns, well, that means that the regime isn't quite as strong as maybe we thought it was, if they're that worried about what other generals might think. So just by seeing little things like that, hearing words and seeing what people are wearing, you can make all these assumptions. And they could just be playing a big game. Who knows? Or it could be very accurate. Well, the WikiLeaks release, which happened a couple of days ago, you know, this story never dies. WikiLeaks just keeps coming up with this amazing material. People keep giving it to them. It's incredible. Of course, maybe it's the same person giving all of it to them. Maybe it's all Bradley Manning. Who knows? Nothing's actually been proven. But this particular release of diplomatic cables, I think, is the most entertaining, because it's kind of like just hearing all this gossip, hearing what people are saying about each other. Yeah, making fun of different leaders, saying all kinds of nasty things about the physical appearance, perhaps, or just the way they're perceived, and seeing what is actually being said in these diplomatic circles. I find it fascinating, and this is very different. This is very different than giving information about wartime strategies or all the other things that we're warned that might endanger lives, information about informants, things like this. In this particular case, though, it's simply what diplomats are saying to each other. And I think we have the right to know this. I think we have the right to know all of it. But yeah, this is going to embarrass certain people who said these things. But, you know, I like to know, if you say this kind of a thing in some kind of a dispatch, does it ever become public? Does it ever become something that people find out about at some point in the future? That you called the prime minister of Pakistan a baboon or something. You know, does that fact ever become known, or is it erased from history at some point? And if it's meant to be erased from history at some point, why in God's name do they keep so many copies of it? They stick it on computer systems where all kinds of people have access to it. Obviously, people that are able to leak it. More than just the people that are involved in the conversation, clearly. So, right there, there's a lot of people that know about this. All that's happened with this latest WikiLeaks release is that a bunch more people now know about it. Now, here's some interesting highlights. Defense Minister Ehud Barak of Israel warned that the world has just 6 to 18 months to stop Iran from building a nuclear weapon. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia imploring Washington to cut off the head of the snake. Bahrain's king warning that letting Iran's program proceed was greater than the danger of stopping it. Now, according to a New York Times editorial, the business of diplomacy is often messy, and when private communications become public, it can also be highly embarrassing. But what struck us and reassured us about the latest trove of classified documents released by WikiLeaks was the absence of any real skullduggery. After years of revelations about the Bush administration's abuses, including the use of torture and kidnappings, much of the Obama administration's diplomatic wheeling and dealing is appropriate and at times downright skillful. Yeah, the best example of that is its handling of Iran. As the cables show, the administration has been under pressure from both Israel and Arab states to attack Tehran's nuclear program preemptively. It has wisely resisted while pressing for increasingly tough sanctions on Iran. So, yeah, you know, this actually looks like a star on the Obama administration, at least for this. The cables also add insight into how the Obama administration has built the case for sanctions against Iran. To win China's support, it got Saudi Arabia to promise Beijing a steady supply of oil. To win over Russia, it replaced a Bush-era missile defense plan with one that is just as effective that Moscow finds less threatening. The administration may well be uncomfortable about disclosures of its wheeling and dealing to try to get governments to accept prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. Slovenia was told that taking a prisoner was the price for a meeting with President Obama. We wish that the White House had been as energetic and inventive in its attempts to get Congress to shut down the prison. We were reassured to learn that Washington has been trying to persuade Pakistan to remove nuclear fuel from a reactor so it cannot be diverted for use in a terrorist weapon, and that the United States and South Korea are prudently discussing how to handle the potential collapse of North Korea. Disconcertingly, there is no sign that Washington or Seoul knew about the North's recently disclosed uranium enrichment plant. The Obama administration should definitely be embarrassed by its decision to continue a Bush administration policy directing American diplomats to collect the personal data, including credit card numbers and frequent flyer numbers of foreign officials. Yeah, that dangerously blurs the distinction between diplomats and spies and is best left to the spies. There are legitimate reasons for keeping many diplomatic conversations secret. The latest WikiLeaks revelation will cause awkward moments, not least because they contain blunt assessment of world leaders. The claim by Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton that the leaks threaten national security seems exaggerated. The documents are valuable because they illuminate American policy in a way that Americans and others deserve to see. That was an editorial which ran yesterday in the New York Times. And yes, we deserve to see this. This is history. This is how our world is shaped. And we're citizens of this world. We have every right to know what's being done in our names. I don't see lives being put at risk here. I see reputations, perhaps, some people being embarrassed. But you know what? You shouldn't say things if you don't want them to come back to you. I've learned that. You know, you send emails to people. Well, they could send them to somebody else. You post on a bulletin board. Yeah, that could be seen by people you don't want to see it. Happens all the time. Welcome to technology, diplomats. But the most interesting thing about this, it's not just the United States this time. It's all countries throughout the world, what they're saying about each other. The fact that some Arab nations are oppressing Washington and other nations, apparently, to do things about Iran. Well, that's interesting. Probably the most interesting thing, though, is China. China's comments about North Korea, referring to them as a spoiled child and getting kind of tired of their antics, saying that they're interested in the possibility of a unified Korea run by Seoul, run by South Korea. Now, that can't be sitting well in North Korea, but you have to wonder where this is going to lead. The truth, yeah. The truth leads to some very interesting places. So the North now knows they can't rely on China to back them up. Maybe they'll do less crazy things now as a result of this. Time will tell. We'll probably talk more about this tomorrow night on Off the Hook, so please tune into that. That'll be all kinds of fun as well. Hey, you know what? Today, for the first time ever in my life, you know what happened? I felt an earthquake today. Yeah, I felt an earthquake. I felt this noise. I woke up, and it was like some kind of rumbling, I guess, a truck, something that woke me up. And later on, I was listening to the radio, and I heard at exactly that time there was an earthquake that struck south of Southampton, somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, I think about 70 miles out. I think it was a 3.9. And people, exactly the part of Long Island that I was in at the time, felt it. And, you know, all my life I've wanted to feel an earthquake. I don't want to feel a major earthquake, but, you know, something. I'd like to feel an earthquake. I'd like to see a tornado from a distance. And yeah, it's good to know that you'll wake up if you feel an earthquake. It'll get your attention. But the thing that bothers me is I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't act on the information. I just went right back to sleep. But I did notice it. Yeah, I noticed it. Next step is, okay, we have an earthquake. What do we do about it? I imagine maybe if it was a bit more severe, I might have sprung into action. Who knows? But yeah, I think a lot of people on Long Island felt this. This goes to show that there's seismic activity everywhere. You know what else there is everywhere? Guns. Oh my God. This was not a good week. Actually, you know what? I think every week is not a good week because I just try and block it out most of the time. I think we all do. But there was a story yesterday. I only heard about this later in the day. I changed my cable TV subscription. I realized I could do this. I could drop something known as family cable, all right, because I really have no interest in family cable, and go to what's known as broadcast basic. And then you add this little package on top of that for about $10, and that adds other channels, but not the family cable channels. But the beauty of this is those other channels include my favorite channel, Euronews, and BBC World News, the two channels I watch more than anything. And what I occasionally do, usually when I wake up, I turn on channel 103, watch Euronews, then go to BBC, watch them a little bit, then go over to channel 25, which is Cablevision's position for CNN. Every time I do this, this is what happens. I watch the news on channel 103, I watch the news on channel 104, I turn to channel 25, there are commercials. Every time. CNN just has commercials. Whenever I go there, it's either Larry King or a commercial. Never get the news. Well, today I tried this after changing my cable package, getting rid of that family cable nonsense, and guess what happened? I watched the news on channel 103, watched the news on channel 104, Euronews and BBC, switched to CNN. I'm no longer authorized to watch CNN. CNN has been cut from my program, from my package. Yeah, I don't get CNN anymore. Isn't that something? You can subscribe for cheaper to just the international news services and not get the domestic ones. I don't get Fox, I don't get MSNBC, I don't get CNN. Good riddance. Nothing but commercials anyway and stupidity. So I'm thrilled. I'm saving about $50 a month now by not watching any of the channels that I never watched in the first place. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, but that's how I found out about this this hostage crisis that happened yesterday in Wisconsin. A 15-year-old sophomore, 15, held 23 of his classmates and a teacher hostage for about 5 hours yesterday at a Northeast Wisconsin high school, fired his two weapons at least five times, had a duffel bag containing more bullets, and wound up turning the gun on himself, died today. Tragic story. And the thing is, this is what's coming out today. Everybody knew this kid. This kid was bright, popular, never showed any signs of anything like this. And it just goes to show that anybody and everybody has a snapping point. And we don't know what's going to cause it. Nobody understands how this could have happened. Nobody understands what made this kid do this. But the fact of the matter is, he did. And the fact of the matter is, everybody snaps in some way. And you hear stories like this way too often. And you make access to guns so easy that somebody, when they snap, can just grab a gun and do something like this, you're going to have a lot more tragedy. Now, the crazy part about this is that just saying a sentence like that, just saying that statement, that simple statement, riles people so much that they flip out completely. Not to this extent, but they think that you're against everything that this country stands for. You know what? This country does not stand for the out-of-control gun violence that exists today and the easier access to guns than to food that we have in this country. That's not what the Founding Fathers had in mind. And I think most people who are opposed to this kind of nonsense are not people saying we must go and confiscate all the guns from everybody. No, they're not saying that at all. And I think the person who convinced me, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that it's not the gun so much as our violent society, is Michael Moore in Bowling for Columbine. And if you think Bowling for Columbine is an anti-gun movie, you have not seen it. You have not watched it. You've not paid attention. Because there is so much inherent in our society that leads us to be violent, and when you have tools of violence that are so easily accessible, then you have so many instances that could have been avoided normally. And instead, we're moving into this this way of thinking where it's just inevitable that something like this is going to happen. Schools simply prepare for the day when some student's going to go berserk and hold people hostage or just start shooting. That's not the right way to go. The right way to go is to have some common sense in our minds. Agree that we're not after taking people's guns away from them. If they feel they have to have something in their home to protect them, personally, I think it's a stupid idea, but if they are proven to be responsible, fine. Not a problem. But you do have to be responsible. We can't just hand out the guns and wait for people to be irresponsible, because by the time they've proven that, it's too late. Now, what about the Second Amendment? What do they say in the Constitution? You know what? The Founding Fathers didn't know anything about high schools, didn't know anything about malls, didn't know anything about semi-automatic machine guns. It was a different world in the 1700s. Let's deal with that. Let's update things appropriately. And those of you who go around with your weapons caches and a collection of guns, admit that you're doing it for an artistic purpose, for sportsmanship, but not to take back the government, because you're never going to do it that way. Your weapons cache is probably going to be used for something else, a lot more sinister and a lot more harmful, which is why it's not a good idea, and society should dictate that, not the government. Society should say, you know, I don't like this guy next door to me having having rounds of ammunition all over the place and firing guns in the middle of the night and basically being equivalent to an army of a third world nation. Not healthy. Not healthy for society. Bad idea. But hunting, you know, hunting or self-protection or whatever, that's fine. As long as you're not a psychopath, as long as you don't do stupid things. Like, okay, let's agree to something, all right? Can we all agree? At Halloween, when the kids come knocking at your door, it's pretty irresponsible for you to hand them a gun instead of a piece of candy, right? Can we agree on that? I think the NRA probably would say, no, you know what? You have the right to do that. You have the right to bring your gun to church. You have the right to bring your gun to the workplace. You have the right to conceal all kinds of weapons on you as you walk down the street. Well, no, you know what? In your twisted world, maybe you do. But in any society that wants to survive, you don't. Because that's crazy. And I don't think that's what the Founding Fathers had in mind at all. Different world in the 1700s. I know a lot of weapons enthusiasts, and I respect that. And I applaud their responsibility. And I want to see them continue doing the things that make them happy and productive, but not when it threatens other people. And I think they'd be the first to agree with that. And everyone always says, you know, I'm responsible, I know what I'm doing, but there are so many people who aren't. And sometimes they're just like us. What else happened this week? Five days after being shot by police officers as he allegedly pointed a firearm at them after setting fire to his house, a West Babylon man, that's right here on Long Island, has died of his wounds. Another death that would not have happened without easy access to firearms. What else? Oh, here's one. I just pulled something for the last day or so. The St. Francois County coroner says that four people have died after a shooting in Bon Terre, Missouri. Happened today as a domestic situation. Three people were killed, one person committed suicide. This is what happens. You get into a fight with people in your house, and one thing leads to another. You have a gun nearby, and all of a sudden, it's beyond crazy. Meanwhile, the NRA has come out with what the New York Times describes as a clever new way to undermine public safety. Just in the past year, the guns rights group sought to scuttle basic gun controls enacted by the District of Columbia, including a ban on powerful semi-automatic weapons in the nation's capital. They also blocked common-sense efforts in Congress to bar people on the FBI's terrorist watch list from buying guns and explosives. I just don't get that. People who are wanted on the terrorist watch list, you feel comfortable with them walking around with guns down your street. Well, of course. You know why? Because you're going to have bigger guns. It's an arms race in our streets. It's not the way to deal with the problem. associating with the police chief's group that that wants to reduce the use of handguns on city streets was the crime of Andrew Traver, who was denounced as a deeply aligned with gun control advocates person. Yeah. And he was nominated for as the new director of Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives by President Obama. And, yeah, he was completely castigated for daring to do that, reducing use of handguns on city streets. And finally, the gun lobby has filed two lawsuits in federal court in Lubbock, Texas, to compel the state of Texas to allow young people between the ages of 18 and 20 years to buy handguns and carry them concealed in public places. Beyond the dubious legal claims, the idea that young individuals ages 18 to 20 have a constitutional right to buy weapons and carry them loaded and concealed in public is breathtakingly irresponsible. Young people in that range, age range, commit a disproportionate amount of gun violence. FBI crime data shows arrests for murder, non-negligent homicides, other violent crimes peaking from ages 18 to 20. And that's where I kind of disagree with the editorial, because I don't think you can lump people in by age group, by race, by sex, by anything like that. But you simply have to earn responsibility, regardless of how old you are, or where you're from, or where you live. And there are certain situations that trump this particular desire to walk around with concealed weapons. For instance, in crowded environments where, you know, things can get out of hand pretty quickly. Much different than living in the middle of the countryside. There's so much more to this story, so much more to these concerns, but I just don't get how you can see the events that have been unfolding, for God knows how long in this country, and not realize that there's a problem that can't be solved by throwing more weapons into the mix. And though people who say this are not people who are supporting the secret United Nations armies that will come into your house and take all your weapons away from you. No, it's not that at all. Let's get away from the paranoia and start trying to solve the problem. We'll talk more about this because we're out of time now. Abbreviated show, basketball coming up. Write to us, though, otw at 2600.com. Keep it civil, please. You know what? You don't have to keep it simple. Just stop your mind. Say whatever you feel like. That's what it's all about. That's what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Yeah, OTW at 2600.com. We'll be back again next week for, God help us, the final Starbucks competition. Emmanuel, have a good night. Long may you run, long may you run.
got you now. With those waves singing carols.